All right, let's dive in. Today we're tackling a big one. Did the U.S. provoke Russia's invasion of Ukraine?
Definitely a hot topic. We're looking at this debate from the Soho Forum, featuring Scott Horton, author of Provoked, arguing the affirmative, against Eli Lake taking the opposing view.
So should we start by going back to the fall of the Soviet Union?
Seems like a good place to start. Horton claims the U.S. made promises to the Soviets about NATO expansion, basically assuring them that it wouldn't happen.
NATO expansion, for those who might not know, means the growth of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, dot eastward, toward Russia.
Right. The U.S. was essentially saying, hey, we won't move NATO closer to your borders. And based on those assurances, the Soviets made some huge concessions. Like, what?
They allowed the reunification of Germany and even disbanded the Warsaw Pact, their own military alliance. Imagine Russia as part of NATO.
A real turning point in history. But then Horton points to the 1997 NATO-Russia Founding Act. The U.S. pledged not to permanently station major combat forces in new NATO countries.
Sounds promising.
Well, Horton says the Bush administration broke that promise by putting anti-ballistic missile systems in Romania and Poland.
So did the U.S. go back on its word?
That's Horton's argument. Moving NATO right up to Russia's doorstep, basically creating a perceived threat to their security.
Okay, I see where he's going with this.
And it doesn't stop there. Horton also brings up the shock therapy economic policies imposed on Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union.
What were those exactly?
Radical economic reforms that many argue led to instability and hardship for everyday Russians. Imagine inheriting a broken economic system and then having another powerful country force drastic changes.
It's no wonder there's some bad blood, right?
Exactly. And fueling that fire even more, Horton emphasizes how the U.S. supported revolutions in former Soviet republics. Even big names like George Kennan, an architect of U.S. Cold War policy, warned against pushing for Ukraine to join NATO.
Why was that?
Kennan understood the historical and cultural ties between Russia and Ukraine. He even called pushing Ukraine towards NATO a tragic mistake, predicting it could spark conflict.
So he was basically saying, don't poke the bear.
Pretty much. And Horton's point is that the U.S. poked the bear anyway, ignoring the warnings and pushing for Ukraine to join their sphere of influence. This all culminated in the 2014 Maidan Revolution, which removed the pro-Russian president, Viktor Yanukovych.
And this is where things get really controversial.
Absolutely. Horton claims the CIA was deeply involved in Ukraine, even demanding the new government attack the Donbas region.
So he's saying the U.S. was pulling strings, trying to instigate a conflict to weaken Russia.
Exactly. He even points to a RAND Corporation report that specifically advised against provoking Russia.
And Horton says?
The U.S. did exactly that.
Wow. Pretty serious accusations.
It is. But before we jump to conclusions, let's see what Eli Lake has to say about all of this.
Let's hear the other side of the story then.
Lake starts by looking at Putin's speech before the invasion. Putin talked about Ukraine historically being part of Russia. Lake uses that to argue that Putin just wants to reclaim what he sees as lost territory. It's not about fear of U.S. provocation. It's about rebuilding a lost empire.
So basically, he's saying Putin's the aggressor here.
Exactly. He also says Putin's claims of a Nazi regime in Kiev are just propaganda meant to justify the invasion. He emphasizes that Ukrainians have always wanted independence.
Like in 1991, when they voted to separate from the Soviet Union.
Exactly. A clear sign of their desire to be independent. Lake also reminds us that the U.S. actually supported Russia's transition after the Soviet Union fell apart.
Wait, really?
Yeah, we helped restructure their debt and supported their entry into the IMF. Doesn't sound like a country looking to start a new Cold War, right?
That's a good point.
And then there's Obama's reset policy. Lake argues that while there are valid critiques of U.S. foreign policy in the region, it's Putin's ambitions driving this, not genuine fear of NATO.
So he's saying Putin's a bit of a bully.
That's one way to put it. He points to Russia's actions in Georgia, Belarus, places that were once part of the Soviet Union. Putin's been interfering in those countries for years.
So Lake's saying, look, this pattern of aggression from Russia goes way back.
Exactly. And he even compares the work of the National Endowment for Democracy, or NED, to what he calls Russian influence operations. The NED promotes democracy in Ukraine while Russia engages in shady interference.
Sounds like a pretty clear distinction.
That's Lake's argument. He points to the GRU, Russia's military intelligence, and their history of causing trouble in neighboring countries. It's all part of this pattern of Russian aggression he's highlighting.
So we're seeing two very different takes on this. Horton says the U.S. is deliberately provoking Russia, while Lake emphasizes Putin's goals and Russia's past actions.
And to complicate things even more, an audience member jumps in with a really important point. What about the Ukrainian perspective? This person actually experienced the Russian invasion of Donetsk in 2014 firsthand. They saw Russian tanks rolling into the city, Ukrainian flags replaced with Russian ones, anyone who protested being silenced. It's a stark reminder that real people are caught in the middle of this geopolitical tug of war.
Absolutely. Their story really challenges Horton's claim that it was mostly Ukrainian militia groups driving the conflict. This adds a whole new layer to the debate.
It does.
We'll have to pick up on the rest of this debate, including the 2014 Maidan Revolution in part two of this deep dive.
Things get really heated when the debate shifts to the 2014 Maidan Revolution.
What makes it so contentious?
Horton argues the U.S. was pulling the strings behind the scenes, basically orchestrating the uprising.
While Lake.
Lake insists it was a genuine grassroots movement. Ukrainians taken to the streets, demanding change, wanting a future more aligned with Europe and democratic values.
It sounds like it was a pivotal moment.
It was. A real tug of war between East and West, with Ukraine caught right in the middle.
So where does the truth lie?
Probably somewhere in between, as with most complex situations. The U.S. was definitely involved in supporting pro-democracy groups, but the extent of their influence is debatable.
Right. It's never black and white.
Yeah.
What about the internal factors? Didn't those contribute to the unrest?
Absolutely. Remember, the revolution was sparked by Yanukovych, the president at the time. He suddenly backed out of a trade deal with the EU in favor of closer ties with Russia.
I see.
Many Ukrainians felt betrayed, like their aspirations for a more democratic and prosperous future were being ignored.
So it was a combination of internal and external pressures that led to the revolution.
Exactly. It's rarely a simple case of one country controlling another. And Lake brings up another interesting point. He says U.S. support for civil society in Ukraine, while maybe a bit naive, is fundamentally different from what Russia was doing.
How so?
He argues that Russia was actively involved in covert operations and military backing for separatist groups in the Donbas region.
Providing weapons and training?
Exactly. Lake sees U.S. support for democracy as legitimate, a way to counter that Russian influence, not a deliberate attempt to threaten their security.
Makes sense. But wasn't Horton's point that even seemingly harmless activities can backfire?
Yes. He argued that funding NGOs and promoting democracy, however well-intentioned, could have unintended consequences, especially in such a sensitive region.
So both agree the U.S. made mistakes, but they disagree on the scale and the impact.
Precisely. It really begs the question, can we hold the U.S. partially responsible for the war without also excusing Putin's aggression and his blatant disregard for international law?
That is a tough question to answer.
It is. And it's one each of us needs to wrestle with as we try to make sense of this incredibly complex conflict.
Okay, so we've got these contrasting views. What else did this debate highlight?
It really forced us to confront a difficult reality. The U.S. has, at times, overestimated its ability to shape events in other countries and underestimated the potential consequences. We need to learn from these mistakes, develop a more nuanced foreign policy, one that recognizes our limits and acknowledges the world's complexities.
So, a more cautious approach.
Not necessarily cautious, but definitely more thoughtful, more strategic. And we have to prioritize diplomacy and dialogue over military solutions every time.
Because at the end of the day, it's the people of Ukraine who are paying the highest price.
Exactly. We can't forget that. And this is where that audience member story from Donetsk really hits home. Remember, they described seeing Russian tanks rolling through their streets, Ukrainian flags replaced with Russian ones.
A chilling reminder of the human cost of this conflict.
It is. And it challenges the narrative that this was solely a local conflict driven by Ukrainian separatists. Russia was actively involved in fueling the conflict. That much is clear.
Their account really highlights the impact of propaganda and disinformation.
Absolutely. It underscores how crucial it is to seek out multiple sources of information and to be wary of simplistic explanations.
Yes, and things are rarely as simple as they seem.
Exactly. Horton and Lake also clashed on the 2008 war between Russia and Georgia.
Oh, right. I remember that. Fill us in.
Horton claimed that Georgia, not Russia, was the aggressor in that conflict.
Really? I thought Russia was the one who invaded.
That's the common narrative, but Horton argued that Georgia's then-president Saakashvili made a reckless move by attacking South Ossetia.
A breakaway region with close ties to Russia.
Exactly. Horton believes Saakashvili was emboldened by U.S. support and miscalculated, which then allowed Russia to intervene militarily.
So he's saying it was Georgia that started it.
That's his take. But Lake, of course, has a different interpretation. He argued that Russia had been actively destabilizing South Ossetia for years, encouraging separatist movements long before Georgia took any military action.
So Lake's saying Russia was pulling strings behind the scenes there, too.
Yes. He pointed to evidence of Russian forces already operating in the region and the Kremlin's support for those separatist groups. It's another example of how historical narratives can be contested, leading to very different conclusions.
It's like everyone has their own version of history.
In a way, yes. And that's why it's so important to be critical of the information we consume, to challenge our own biases, and to look for evidence from multiple sources.
So after all this back and forth, where do we land?
Well, it's clear that assigning blame in a complex situation like the war in Ukraine is never straightforward. There are no easy answers and plenty of room for disagreement.
So what should we take away from all of this?
I think the biggest takeaway is the importance of understanding the historical context. We need to recognize the limits of U.S. power and prioritize diplomacy over military intervention.
Yeah.
We can't forget the human cost of this conflict. The voices of those most affected, like that audience member from Donetsk, need to be heard and amplified.
This deep dive has really shown how important it is to think critically, consider multiple perspectives, and be wary of narratives that oversimplify complex situations.
Absolutely. It's about recognizing that there are many different sides to every story, and that the truth often lies somewhere in the gray areas.
It's amazing how this whole debate about U.S. provocation actually raises even bigger questions, don't you think?
Absolutely. Like what?
Well, the whole idea of U.S. power. Horton makes it seem like the U.S. can just control everything, you know, orchestrating revolutions, manipulating events.
He paints them as this global puppet master pulling the strings from behind the scenes.
Right. And everyone else just reacts to what they do. But then Lake comes in and says, well, hold on.
Lake acknowledges that the U.S. has made its share of mistakes, but not out of malice, more like
naivete.
Yeah, maybe a lack of understanding of the complexities on the ground. He's basically saying the U.S. has influence, but they're not all powerful.
Not some mastermind calling all the shots. And this is where that audience member's story from Donetsk is so important. Seeing the Russian invasion firsthand, the tanks, the flags, it really dismantles the idea that Russia wasn't deeply involved.
It really does. A stark reminder that there are real people whose lives are being turned upside down by this conflict.
It's so easy to get caught up in the geopolitical maneuvering and forget about the human cost.
It is. And that's why it's so crucial to get these different perspectives, especially ones that challenge the official narratives. We can't just rely on governments or the media to tell us the whole story.
We have to dig deeper, question our own assumptions, and listen to the people who are actually living through these events.
Exactly. And that's something this deep dive has really driven home for me. It's made me think twice about where I get my information from and how I interpret it.
We have to remember that history is often written by the winners, right? The narratives we're giving can be very selective.
For sure. And even sources that seem objective can be influenced by all sorts of things. Biases, hidden agendas.
Especially in this day and age when information is everywhere, but it's also so easily manipulated.
It's more important than ever to be critical thinkers.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what are some key takeaways for our listeners?
Well, one thing is for sure. Understanding complicated geopolitical situations like this requires us to be comfortable with nuance and ambiguity. There's rarely a simple answer or a clear-cut villain.
Right. We have to be willing to grapple with the messiness of it all.
And we have to seek out different perspectives, be open to challenging our own assumptions, and remember that nobody has a monopoly on the truth.
I think that's a really important point.
And this whole thing really highlights how interconnected the world is. What happens in Ukraine impacts everyone, even if it doesn't seem like it at first.
What happens in one part of the world has ripple effects everywhere else.
Exactly. It's a reminder that we're all in this together and our actions or our inactions have consequences.
This has been a fascinating deep dive. And it's clear that there's no easy answer to the question of whether the U.S. provoked Russia's invasion.
Definitely not. But what we can do is keep having these conversations, seeking out those different perspectives, and challenging the narratives that shape how we see the world.
Encouraging critical thinking and prioritizing empathy.
Exactly. That's how we move towards a more peaceful and just future together.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep those critical thinking caps on.